there's a lot of thought that goes into it sometimes, you know. And so in the theme park world, we do have to be very calculated with it and very specific on how we control the flow rate inside our attractions and making sure that people are having these positive experiences without, you know, having to wait 3 hours in line, you know, for a minute attraction, you know, type of thing.
I think the big point on that, and I think it is often overlooked, it doesn't matter how awesome your haunt is. If you wait three hours in line, it's hard to match up to that, you know. It's hard to deliver after waiting 3 hours in line. So,
welcome to Haunt Topic Radio, the podcast for haunters by haunters.
Hello again, haunters. Welcome back to another episode of Haunt Topic Radio. In this episode, we have a few guests that are on. I had the pleasure to sit down with Ted Dotary and John Cook at Transworld. They've been behind Knott's Scary Farm for many years. They've kind of decided to team up and create a cool spin on an escape game. You probably heard about it by now. Murder Co. It's an adult-rated horror experience escape game out in the California area. You can learn more about it at blackmarketescaperooms.com. And the National Haunters Convention is back at the Atlantic City Boardwalk in New Jersey. We get Andy Russ and Susan Russ on to talk about that. They are from Dark Forest Creations and Burn Bray Mansion. They talk about the murder mystery voodoo event that they're hosting, the Mardi Gras Costume Ball. All this is happening May 18th through the 20th. You can find out more about the National Haunters Convention at halloweenshow.com. If you go to the convention, they're also doing a tour of Terror Behind the Walls. They're having a hearse event. They're having classes. They have vendors, celebrity guests, the hearse show, zombie volleyball, a magic show, and more. So if you live out on the East Coast, this might be a good event for you to attend and check out. Prices start for the show between $25 to $100, and the murder mystery is $59 to $113. All depends if you want to go by yourself or bring someone with you. Plus, we dive into a few more topics. We ask Ted about throughput and a haunted attraction and how to keep your queue line and your throughput efficient. And we also talked to Andy and Susan and captured some stories about their experiences at the National Haunters Convention. Plus, we throw in a few nuggets from one of our trainings in the past with Barb Butler and Michael Edwards. They talk about low voltage lighting for your haunted trail and security for your haunted attraction. We are having another class coming up, how to create a character with special effects makeup and airbrushing with Justin Fears and Lucas Turner. Justin and Lucas both from the Phobias Haunted House in Wright City, Missouri. That training is coming up May 14th at 8 p.m. This is a live training for an hour and a half. It's $25. We will answer all your questions on anything makeup related. I'm sure we'll talk about scare acting and a bunch of other stuff, but we're mainly focused on makeup. That's May 14th at 8 p.m., 8 to 9:30. To sign up for this class, go to hauntertoolbox.com/class. It will also be on our haunttopic.com website. There's a little banner at the top. You click onto that, it'll take you straight there. And if you're a subscriber to our email list, there will be a link in this email for you to sign up. Only 30 spots available, so reserve your ticket as soon as possible. Oh, you plus get the complete replay as well. But let's get into our interview with Ted and John from Murder Co. and Andy and Susan Russ from Dark Forest Creations. Man, I don't know what it is for me, day one of Transworld. So I know you guys got to be beat by now,
it's
right?
Day one, you don't even remember what day you
were. No. Oh, my God. I only made it like booth 600, so I've been here since 10.
Oh, my gosh.
So we got John Cook from Plague Productions. You might know from Knott's Berry. And Ted Dotary.
Doherty. You got it.
Say it again, Ted.
Doherty.
All right, gotcha.
From Lunar Visions.
I know I've seen you guys around for many years, the trade shows and everything you guys do with Knott's Berry Farm, and I know some things have transitioned over the last year or so, and just kind of get you on the Hot Topic Radio and talk about that.
Yeah.
And some direction you're headed.
I think it's exciting too, because I know I've done an interview with you over the phone, and yes. Ted's done one with you over the phone, but here we are in person. It's awesome. Super cool.
Yes.
At Transworld, of all places. Love it.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I know we've always crossed paths. I mean, I saw you at Hong Kong, but we get like 15 minutes to talk maybe. And
yeah,
I know
maybe.
You all did like some... You did a big panel there.
Yeah, that was a quick fly-in for us just because we were smack dab in the middle of other projects. So we just flew in, did that panel, and kind of got out of there pretty quick. But yeah, we were able to... catch up a little bit there.
I know you're in the new Philip Hernandez has the new magazine now, and you guys, I know John's in there. I think you might be in there as well.
I am, yeah.
And Ted, you're doing some speaking this time?
Yeah, so we did an interesting seminar yesterday here at Transworld that was about throughput, especially for kind of an emphasis on theme parks, but we definitely touched home haunters to independent pro haunters. It was called Hitting the Mark, Maximizing Throughput Without Sacrificing Story, because as very good friends have said, you know, in the theme park industry, we truly live and die by throughput, right? And for a lot of folks, it's something that seems to be somewhat... We all have to address it, but I'm not sure there's a lot of thought that goes into it sometimes, you know? And so in the theme park world, we do have to be very calculated with it and very specific on how we control the flow rate inside our attractions and making sure that people are having these positive experiences without, you know, having to wait 3 hours in line, you know, for a minute attraction, you know, type of thing.
I think the big point on that, and I think it is often overlooked, it doesn't matter how awesome your haunt is. If you wait three hours in line, it's hard to match up to that. You know, it's hard to deliver after waiting 3 hours in line. So,
yeah,
well, I've seen
good
a lot
topic.
Of,
yes. Good topic.
I've seen a lot of excellent haunts, but like the rate and the bad reviews they get are the wait time.
Absolutely.
And the queue line, you know, and so... In your talk, Ted, what kind of stuff what's your biggest thing that you see and some of the things that they...
Well, I mean, I kind of gave a breakdown without getting into like a whole bunch of like boring math, but gave a breakdown on the formula that we use to calculate theoretical throughput is truly one of the most valuable tools used in design management. And I simply gave the formula that I use, which is just TH equals I divided by T. And I know that sounds horrible, right? But the TH, it's simple. The TH equals our throughput. The I equals the inventory that is required in that given period of time. And then the T equals the time used to accomplish our task. So the idea is just to be able to plug these numbers in and mathematically determine how many guests we need per hour, per minute, or whatever. And that helps with our storytelling and telling us how much time we have to tell our story.
Oh, John, you got an important call you got to take, huh?
Yeah, man, it never ends at Transworld, man. Trying to sit down for 10 minutes is usually tough. So I apologize. I have to run, but...
Well, before you run, tell us where people can find you and what your new adventure's going on before you head out.
I'm all over social media stuff, so my handle is Johnny X Plague. Ted, it'll fill you in a little bit more, but we just launched a new company called Black Market Escape Rooms. Our first show is Murder Co., the nation's first rated R horror experience. I'm still heavily involved consulting and designing in the theme park world with Not Scary Farm officially right now and a couple more in the works. So hopefully I'll be around quite a bit this year.
That's what Transworld's here for, man. It is connect with people and and to, you know, keep growing. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
All right.
Good to see you. And well, I guess we'll catch up eventually.
Yes. I'm sorry. We'll to be continued. How about that?
That's right.
All right.
All right.
All right, Brian. Thank you.
Yep. See you.
See you later.
So you know a little bit about this escape room stuff, right?
Yes, just a little bit.
Yeah. So since John took off, you can talk bad about him now while he's not here. But so tell us a little bit about what's going on with that.
Yeah, well, to kind of just rewind just a little bit, I mean, we know John's background as, originally a talent at Not Scary Farm, one of the monsters, and developed into more working into the carpentry and into props, and then eventually becoming a designer for Not Scary Farm, and truly one of the premier designers for Scary Farm. Historically, has designed some of the most effective and really the most popular attractions ever seen in Not Scary Farm's history, with Paranormal Incorporated, and Infected, and Dark Ride. And so we know his background. My background is also at Knott's. I started as one of the slider monsters that, you know, scared in the ghost town scares
us. Is that really as hard as people say it is, man?
I don't think
I could take it.
Well, I don't know how much I'd be able to do it now, but when I was younger, it wasn't too bad. You just pace yourself. At least with Knott's, we went through a lot of safety precautions to make sure we're conditioned and properly trained. They have a certification program there that we all went through. And so it's tough. It is exhausting, don't get me wrong. But I did it. There's people that do it. So, I mean, we can... It's difficult, but it's not impossible or anything like that.
Sorry for interrupting. I've seen them on. I've seen your... There's a whole crew out there, right, of slider that you guys train. And, I mean, they got the knee pads, the metal, and the gloves, and the... And they do all kinds of little bit of some of them even have a little bit of a parkour look like mixed in, you know. They do some crazy stuff, right?
Yeah.
Just
much props
for doing that,
so,
man.
So there is a kind of a slider troupe that are some very dear friends of mine named the Decade Brigade, and they go around and perform sliding and do all the crazy tricks and stuff. And it's not... For what they're doing, it's more for performance and show as opposed to scaring, because they're doing it in these different types of environments.
Right.
After working at Not Scary Farm, actually concurrent way back when, while working with Not Scary Farm, I also worked as an associate producer for a now defunct subscription-based video magazine named Haunted Media Magazine, which I know I'm dating myself. It started off as CD-ROMs and then went to DVDs. But it was through then that I went to the early trans worlds, because I traveled across the country covering these haunted attractions and really kind of peeling back the curtain, seeing how some of the top haunted attractions in the country were being produced. And so through them, I was able to get a lot of kind of cool exposure to haunted attractions, the haunted attraction industry outside of what my little bubble was at Knott's. And then after, doing the monstering stuff, I wrote about Not Scary Farm, and that opened up some doors. People said, hey, wow, you know how to produce some things, and you can write. And so started working with other theme park companies, because they said, oh my gosh, you know a lot about this world-famous Halloween event, and you know how to produce some things and stuff. So, I mean, that led to working with, folks like Universal Studios in Hollywood for their Halloween Horror Nights, Cedar Fair, and different companies, and that's been a really cool wild ride. And so the idea behind what ended up becoming Murder Co. was that we had so much work and experience working with the theme park industry. It was like, okay, we have a lot of parameters in the theme park industry. If we were able to kind of take away some of those parameters, what would we do? and the brainchild of John Cook, was this Murderco, which he talked about, it's being billed as the nation's first R-rated escape experience. And just briefly, it revolves around this company named Murderco, which is this high society, black market, underground sports ring that allows its voyeuristic members to pay a lot of money to see live murders.
Nice.
And our guests that will be going to this experience are the members. And so they will go through this adventure that is sort of what we feel is a hybrid attraction, in that it's not our typical haunted house. It's not necessarily a linear haunted attraction. There are escape elements, but kind of look at it more as this immersive horror theater type of experience. And that is what we were trying to do, because at the theme park world, as I had said before, throughput is such a huge deal, right? And so if we kind of made this time ticketed type of situation where we could really give these guests this very intimate, extreme experience, what would we do? And overall, I'm not that great at escape rooms. I've done several of them. I appreciate them, but I'm not that good at solving these puzzles and all that stuff. So for the most part, what we wanted to do is, in our designs for Murderco, the idea was to make it challenging for our guests, but we want them to go get through it. We want them to actually see everything that we have for them. So many people have asked, well, what's going to be the percentage rate of what, you know, people fail? So we're not really focused on that. We want them to get through the experience, but it'll be a challenge to do so.
And you guys are able to, I know it's your first year, so you plan on like switching things up each year, or how does that?
Well, as with like a regular, like seasonal haunted attraction, you go into it planning on, especially like an independent attraction or even like maybe Universal Studios, where they change out their attractions seasonally every year. It's something new. With Not Scary Farm, they repeat their themes every 3 to 5 years. But since Murderco is a permanent installation, the overall show is going to be around for a while, but I gotta mention, it is only going to be for a limited period of time. So this is not gonna be around forever. So in answer to your question, it will be switched out. It will be altered and changed. So what we're doing now is letting the folks know, hey, this is a limited experience, so get your tickets now, because we don't know how long this particular show is going to be existing.
So where can they find this show, and how do they get involved with it?
Well, you can go to blackmarketescaperooms.com, and that is where it has all the ticket information. You can see the Murderco trailer and the massive amount of frequently asked questions. We try to anticipate everything people would be asking. But it has a lot of details as to what this kind of attraction is about. And we also did a pretty in-depth preview article with our friends at themeparkadventure.com, and you can check it out on their website, and it kind of talks a little bit about what John has been doing, sort of making that segue into this outside contractor with Knott's Berry Farm and all that stuff, and goes into more detail as to some of the sneak peeks of what Murderco is.
Right, you don't want to let them know everything. You got to lead them on and give them those hooks. And
that's exactly right.
And so I kind of like what you guys are doing, because it's maybe a new spin on escape games. I see that there's other attractions that have tried and continue to do more immersive experiences,
And it seems like customers want that nowadays. They're, you know, they're, we've done the Naked and Afraid haunts. We've done, you know, there's, everybody's trying to come up with something new and different. And this is definitely new and different. So, and I think, you know, your market out there in California, you know, they're probably hungry for something like this. What made you guys to decide to go this direction?
Kind of like I was mentioning a little bit before, and the idea was it kind of spawned from, we have very strict parameters that we work in with the theme park industry. And so the idea was, what can we do? What would we do if we didn't have some of those parameters? And so we kind of are able to kind of throw the gloves off, gauntlet, right, and kind of just be able to say, okay, what can we do? What would we do if we didn't have all of these sort of rules that we deal with on a daily basis with the theme park world? So that was kind of one of the early ideas on it. And then John and I continued just sort of talking about it and kind of letting it stew. And this is something that he really wanted to do. And so he really kind of pulled the trigger and sparked this whole thing. And my place in it is I co-wrote it with him. I'm the director of the attraction. And so we really try to not only make this a different spin on the escape experience, but also the immersive or theatrical experience as well.
Very good, very good. I like it. And so another question, since all of your, you know, you've been out with California most of your life, what type of attractions have inspired you over the years? I know Knott's Berry is a big part of you. What other kind of things are in your blood?
Well, I mean, through Haunted Media Magazine and just going to these different conventions over the years, just been, you know, blown away by some of these outside haunts of, you know, 13th Gate just floored me the very first time I ever saw them in, you know, Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
And then locally in California, I mean, I'm a fan of Universal Studios because I'm a horror movie fan, and they are the horror movie sort of mecca. They're the ones who created that genre with,
right,
you know, Dracula, Frankenstein, the Wolfman, and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So see that type of thing come true, and even had the, you know, having the opportunity to work with them has just been a dream job, right? And so they've always been a big influence. For Murder Co., though, there's a couple of attractions that have really sort of inspired us. There's an attraction named Delusion that's in Southern California that really blew our minds when we first saw them sort of incorporate this non-linear immersive theater horror type of presentation. And then there's some folks that do an attraction named Creep, as well as The Willows. It's the same company that does both of those attractions. And very inspired by what they've done, because again, it's more theatrically driven horror experiences that we felt were really sort of moving, because it went away from the idea that assembly line, you know, boo scare that, you know, we deal with, you know, sometimes in the conga lines of these huge mazes and all that stuff. These were very intimate, very intense, scary attractions that have been a huge influence on me, and even the other types of folks that are trying to be, you know, pushing the boundaries of the that type of presentation, even with the blackouts and other folks like that, detention experience. There's a lot of immersive horror that is really gritty and intense, that is the opposite of what we could ever do in a theme park. And so I think all of that stuff has at least been an influence for me. I know John has his sets of influences, but the main thing that we really have in common is our love for horror and the drive of having our guests feel satisfied and thrilled as they exit an attraction. And one of the ones that we've worked on, and all of a sudden, you know, they're telling their friends and their family, and they return. And then before you know it, it's a tradition. And that's something that we can all kind of hope to strive for in this business, right?
Well, I definitely want to get out and visit you guys at your home front one day. Sounds really fun. And hell, I'd even want to act in that thing. You know, that'd be awesome.
We'd love to have you do it. We'd love, no matter what, when the time comes and you come to Southern California, you will see Murder Cone.
All right.
Sweet. All right. We'll make it a deal then, man. That's awesome. So for one more time, when will this be open and where can they buy tickets for your event?
So Murderca opens on April 5th, I believe, and all the details. Oh, there you go. We're going to be celebrating your birthday. And you can go to Black Market Escape Rooms .com for all the information. And that's where we want you to learn all about Murderca.
Sweet. Well, it's good to actually sit down and finally talk to you for several minutes and not just pass each other by the booth and at a show. So thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
This segment brought to you by HauntersToolbox.com. To join our next online class, go to HauntersToolbox.com/class.
Okay, we have a question. What is the cheapest way to do lighting? Also the best way to light trails? Either one of you guys.
The cheapest way to do lighting is 12 volt, running either speaker wire or low voltage wire and using low voltage lights. You can actually buy low voltage lights from China, little LEDs, and you actually can make the little cylinders out of tomato sticks. You can also, I can't remember what it is, but you can also buy, they're on I can't remember, but you can also buy these little things that you can actually control the lights to. They have various different things. They cost about $5. You can make the lights flicker. You can do all that, but it's on a lighting site that I cannot remember right now. But I would say that would be probably the cheapest way that you could do lighting and but as far as a trail goes, low voltage lighting is the way to go, but I have not lit a trail that didn't already have power, 110 power to it.
Right. Yeah. The same thing. Cause even when we were doing Dan's Haunted House, we actually had power running out there and we were using those kind of lights. And for the most part, the way that since it was a Japanese themed haunt, we actually had some of those kind of like round paper lanterns that you have. And that's where most of our light came from. Those were lit and strung throughout the entire trail. And what was nice was that they threw just enough light in the areas we wanted them to, but didn't carry off, you know, off into the sides where we didn't want them necessarily to see. And we would space them out just far enough. So as you're kind of walking out of a light, you're kind of walking into another one, but then you also saw them ahead of you. And that was kind of how they followed the trail, was that they were able to see the lights up there. They were dim. What do you recommend for security communication, mostly teenager issues? Don't allow teenagers into your haunt ever. No, for security, I know, I mean, this is something Bart and I used to deal with all the time. I mean, obviously communication between, you know, your actors and the security are key, between their members of security are key as far as having, you know, walkie-talkies, et cetera. But if it's a small haunt, one of the things I'd recommend that really worked for us was that we would have an off-duty police officer dressed as a police officer actually sat on the porch of the haunt house before people went in. And just his presence there was enough to alleviate a lot of the issues because, I mean, he was right there. There was no hiding it. And so people, you know, we would joke that he was just some guy in costume, but that was, we would only joke a little bit about that. But having that, you might also even consider, you can get those fake security cameras if you don't want to actually get an expensive system and have one mounted outside the door and make sure there's a sign, point out the fact that people are going to be on camera as they're going in and when you're telling them the rules. Your best thing to do is to alleviate it before it happens. Beyond that, I've seen, you know, some haunts go to the trouble of actually, I think Reindeer Manor, they actually have a light system running to each and every room, and they've got a big map on their wall. I think Zombie Manor did it too. They had a big map on their wall, and they had like a, what was it, yellow, red, and green lights. And depending on what light switch that actor threw, that told them whether or not there was, you know, somebody getting hit. You know, it's like basically 911. There's a fire, you know, anything like that. But that's, you know, they're a slightly larger haunt. It's not hard to do, and it's not that expensive to do. It just takes a lot of time. But really, any kind of presence, in my opinion, that you can have before they even go into the haunt will help alleviate that.
I would sit there and say that, I mean, it also be your queue line actors. Your queue line actors could be your security. They could be the first eyes on people in the queue line. So I know that that's at the haunt house. That's what we did was our queue line actors always found those people pretty quick. And we would get a head on them. So we would actually be watching them inside the haunt as they went in, because we already pegged them outside. And again, what Mike was saying was that we had our cop right there at the front door. That way, that was the last person you saw before you walked into the haunt, so that his presence was pretty known, that you knew that we weren't messing around. Again, walkie-talkies is the best thing. Again, what he was saying was the switches is also good. Another thing is that easy access for actors to get around your haunt. That is a huge thing that will help. Like if something does happen, they can easily get to another place. They can, you know, they can easily get to somebody who does have a radio if you don't have a light switch system or anything like that.
And if you're going to do that, you know, definitely include that in your actor training, whatever security measures you have, however you want them to handle a security issue if they're to get hit, or you know, whatever it is that you know, for your haunt is going to work as far as who they're supposed to reach out to. You know, do they stop what they're doing? Do they immediately go to security? Whatever it is that you want them to do, make sure that that's very, very heavily covered in your actor training so everybody knows.
Do you need help starting and growing your haunted attraction? Would you like live monthly classes to help you get there? How about a complete video library of our past classes to help you jumpstart your haunted attraction? Then go visit hauntertoolbox.com. Sign up for a Haunter, Pro Haunter, or Haunt Master memberships. Hope to see you there.
I understand that you guys, your expertise is the Saturday party and mystery.
My name is Andy Russ, and I am the president of Dark Forest Creations.
So I am Susan Russ, and I am with Dark Forest Creations, and our home base is Burnbrae Mansion in Glens Bay, New York. And our role in the National Haunt Convention is to provide the entertainment for the ball on Saturday night. We'll be doing a murder mystery with the theme of Mardi Gras voodoo to go with the fabulous theme of the hotel that we're at.
Cool. And that's coming up. That's May 19th is the murder mystery.
The big party is Saturday night, which is open to the public, and you know, vendors come, the guests come, people come in costume. Not mandatory to come in costume, but always more fun if you do. And our murder mysteries are just a great way to meet people, engage the crowd, enjoy the whole theme of the weekend.
Now, I've done murder mysteries that have had, you know, half a dozen people in specific acting roles. How do you run a murder mystery for hundreds of people at an event like that?
The actors that are working the murder mystery are all professionals, and those will be the people who are doing the heavy lifting for the night. So the 150 guests in the room, their job is to help solve the mystery. So they will be asking questions. They will be putting the participants on the spot. So the folks in the audience don't have a role to play other than helping to figure out who did it, how, and why.
And how long does a normal murder mystery take, you know, when you have that many people?
So this particular show, I believe, is scheduled to be about 4 hours, and it'll spread out about 3 hours of that show. So people will be there having a good time, and then, bam, suddenly someone will go down, and then a detective will show up and lead everybody through, you know, who the suspects are, and the kinds of questions that they should be asking. So it's, you know, people in the audience can participate as much or as little as they'd like. We do have fantastic prizes for those who figure out who did it. It comes down to detail because there won't be that many suspects. When the detective, you know, goes through his initial questioning. And it's a really good time for folks just to enjoy the circumstances that they're in.
Now, I've got some friends that can't sit through a 90-minute movie. How do you keep people entertained for 3 hours or out of 4 hours? Is there something else going on? This is a costume ball as well.
Yes. So they are not sitting there at all. They're very much engaged. So this is just one of the many things that they'll be doing during the course of an evening. So picture you're at a wedding and, you know, there's food to be had and there's music to be had and there's dancing. And as part of that, there unfortunately was a murder that happened during the event. So it's all in good fun. We have very talented performers, so there will be some musical performances, fantastic costumes and good special effects. So it's not like you're sitting in a theater and watching something. You're at a party and you're enjoying your surroundings and you have one more, you know, entertainment while you're there.
Cool. So you've done this sort of entertainment before?
We've been doing this for almost 25 years and we've done them for everything as small as a house party where there's 20 people, fundraisers where there may be, you know, 100 people, inns, bed and breakfasts, where there's, you know, usually around 50 to 75 people, corporate events, you know, for big fancy companies like BMW, where they're doing team building, and everybody is a fantastic improv actor. And, you know, we just make sure that everybody has a really good time.
Well, we hope that they do, despite the fact that somebody's going to get murdered. That person might not have the greatest time, but hopefully everybody else does too. So
they usually go out in spectacular fashion, though.
Now, are you involved in this yourself, or are you just doing the management and the running side of it?
I am. And I have a fantastic costume prepared for this one.
Hopefully you can do the voodoo that you do so well then.
Yes. And again, we worked very closely with the people planning the convention to come up with the right theme so that everybody, you know, just has a fantastic time. They have been doing the masquerade ball for many years. So this is just adding another element to it to get people more engaged.
Now, onto the convention side of things, are you involved in the convention at all? Are you going to be attending the convention?
I will be attending the convention. My husband we'll be vending at the convention, and we've been attendees for many years, and we know it's one of the best in the country. Rob attracts some fantastic vendors. The folks who, you know, are visiting the convention are all wonderful. We've met people over the years that we've kept in touch with and done business with, and I'm just thrilled that it's in a venue as large as it is this year. So it's nice to see it growing.
What is your husband vending?
Well, it's the first time I'm actually vending, and we have, I've been in the haunt industry for a long, long time as far as producing haunts. And there's one particular item that we find works fantastic at haunts, and it's basically a loud noise. So basically we have something that's called a horror horn, and it's it blasts a loud horn sound with a light and it flashes. It's a handheld device. I haven't seen any of them out there. It's a one-of-a-kind item that we're having custom made. What's nice about, I go to these events all the time, different type industrial events for the trade. And what's nice about this particular event is that it's Rob really opens it up to individuals who are not, say, the big commercial people who have big items. They make something in their garage or so, which really makes it interesting and unique, where you could find things that you really can't find anywhere else. Well, we're bringing these horror horns is something you really can't find anywhere else. It's an original idea that a friend of mine is putting together, and hopefully we can move them.
So you guys are going to be setting the vendor side of things up on Thursday, and the show floor opens on Friday, if I understand correctly. Are you guys going on any of the tours or anything while you're there, in addition to being on the show floor?
I myself am not going on the tour. I have in the past. I am not making this one, although it sounds terrific. Just my schedule didn't work for me.
That happens for some people. Damn schedules, huh?
Uh-huh.
And as we were talking to Susan, she mentioned that she's going to be one of the guests at the Murder Mystery, one of the actors. Are you doing that as well?
I am indeed, yeah. That's definitely something that I will be doing, and we will have pretty much as most of the cast that will be doing it are haunt actors, and professional actors and haunt actors, so they've been working with me for a long time on all different aspects. So, yes, I will be working the show.
Can you give us any inside information as to who might have done it?
No. But
I guess that would sort of ruin it, wouldn't it?
yes. Who done it? You know, honestly, I don't know who's done it yet. I don't know. No, I do. But it's very interesting because I think Susan just mentioned it's improv, and there is somebody who did it, and there are very strict clues and that people need to drop. So anybody could figure it out if you're really paying attention. But you'd be amazed at how quickly people go off the rails as far as trying to figure it out. But it's easy to figure out if you're paying attention. The clues are dropped, and it's a lot of fun. We make it very, very interactive. So you're not just sitting around staring, and you can get as involved as, or not as you want. But it's a lot of fun.
Now, in addition to the large list of vendors that are going to be at this show, there's going to be some education as well. Do you have any comments? Is there any of the classes that you'd like to go to yourself?
There's a bunch of them. Yeah, I mean, it's terrific. It's actually great. I've been in the business for a long, long time, so I feel I'm pretty educated. But there's always something that I could learn. Unfortunately, because I'm going to be vending and because I'm going to be busy with other things, I will not be able to attend any of the education shows. But I normally do. This, like I said, this is the first time I'm vending. But they really are for anybody, whether you've been in the business for over 20 years as I have or somebody who's just starting, everybody's always got something up their sleeve that I've never heard, and it's great. So I would recommend anybody, if you have the time, to go to any one of the education programs he's got running.
Any time that you can learn something. And even if you think you know something, you might find just one of those golden nuggets from somebody's seminar that it's like, oh,
exactly
most of the
right.
seminar, oh, I know this, but this one thing is like, ta, you know, it's just.
Exactly just, right. I've sat in, because I always try to when I can, I've sat in seminars where I know more than the person talking, and then I'll say, well, I never thought of that. You know, it's somebody's always got a gem, so I always try to send as many as I can where it's somebody's always got something, and there's always something to learn.
Now, you said you've been in the haunt industry for a while. How did you and Susan get into it, and did you guys meet in the haunt industry?
Well, that's going back a long story, but basically I've always been fascinated with Halloween, and like most people, I think, that are in the industry, started as a home haunter, as I did, and we had quite a huge attraction I call it, was my parents' front yard, and where we had tons and tons of people showing up. And at some point, my father-in-law bought a piece of property for himself, you know, upstate, and said, hey, why don't you guys bring your stuff up here and go pro? And that's exactly what we did. And that was 25 years ago. So we've been doing it, and since then we've grown. So we not only do we do it at his property, but we do them in, all over basically the tri-state area. We've been hired by towns, and we've been hired by apple orchards and hayride, you know, farmers. And so we produce, Dark Forest Creations is the name of the company. We produce haunted attractions all over New York, New Jersey.
Wow. So how many attractions are you involved in every year?
We've done up as much as 6 in a year. We were kind of stretched out, and that was about max, and it got to a point where it was too much work and not enough fun. So we backed it off a bit, and now for the last 3 years, we really just focus our energy back to the original property, which is my father-in-law's property, Burnbrae Mansion.
Excellent.
So we just do now, we've kind of down just do consulting now, so we'll get a call and we'll help out here and there, but we're not involved 100% as we were in the past.
Philip, do you have some questions for Andy and Susan?
I really just wanted to know, I guess, in your opinion, as both vendors and attendees, what if you were describing this convention to haunters that had never been there, you know, why why would you tell them to choose this convention over a different convention? Or kind of like, what's the niche that this particular one fills? Because, you know, I've done conventions for a while as well, and I know that each convention kind of has its own vibe. So you recommend different conventions to haunters that are for different reasons. So what would why would you recommend this convention to a haunter?
Well, for one, it covers pretty much all the bases. Where it has the haunt tours for people who just want to check out a haunted attractions, but behind the scenes, the murder mystery event that we're doing with the party, and on top of that, just vendors alone, there's over 100 vendor show booths. But what I like about it, what's different than the other vendor shows I've been to, as a matter of fact, I just came from one in St. Louis. It's very commercial, where it's the booths are very, very expensive, and it's not open for, say, someone like me who just wants to sell a product that they build. This is more open to people who are very creative and just kind of like, hey, may have a great idea, as I just talked about, where you never even thought of, but they don't have the means to, say, go to like Transworld type convention, which is the big one. So you really, really find some great stuff. You walk around and it's just like stuff you have absolutely never seen before, and is extremely creative and very, very original. So that's what separates the vending area from the big Transworld type shows. But on top of that, it's just a real fun. I mean, the group of people, the attendees that go to this is just a real good eclectic bunch of people who just kind of really love the idea of Halloween and haunted attractions. And it's just a real fun convention.
Can you tell us a story about one of your favorite memories of this convention?
Well, there's lots of memories. I mean, what I find is, like I said, I've had fun just meeting the people and doing things. But as I mentioned, I always go back to kind of the vendors. So at this particular show a few years ago, I mean, you have the big vendors here too, but you also have the guys that are just kind of local. So just a few years ago, there was somebody there selling coffins that were, it was a funeral home, I guess, right? It was a funeral home that was recently flooded, so the coffins were damaged, which is funny. They were like the demos that were like damaged, which there was no visible damage, and even if there was, it's perfect for me. So they're unloading these coffins for $150 a coffin, and these coffins are real wood coffins. So, I mean, and beautiful, beautiful coffins that if you want to be buried in, it would cost you thousands of dollars. And where I was just amazed by this, and the guy had him in his, you wouldn't find this at, say, at a Transworld convention. And so I quickly bought the coffins and a bunch of them. I had a buddy pick them up in the back of his trailer, and here I am driving through town with a bunch of coffins and everything. But this is what separates this convention from other conventions, that you could find things like that you would not find anywhere else. I mean, where else are you going to go where somebody's selling real coffins just because it had a little water damage?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. I love that. I love that idea of just stumbling upon this home that has all of these coffins that they can't use anymore, but haunters obviously would love, and they're authentic coffins.
Exactly.
That's great.
I'm really looking forward to it, this convention. I'm looking forward to working it and vending for the first time and doing the murder mystery for the first time there. And also the location, I think, is fantastic now, the new location in Atlantic City. So it just really is a destination type place where you can really have a lot of fun. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you both very much. I hope that you guys and all of our guests get to meet everybody that's listening to this program, comes up, says hi, does some shopping, and I hope they can all attend the murder mystery and the ball on the Saturday night. And I hope you guys kill it. Well, someone, anyways.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
I would also like to thank Daryl Plunkey and Philip Hernandez that were also interviewers in this podcast. You can find Philip Hernandez at the podcast Marketing Your Attraction. It talks about everything marketing, theme parks, attractions, and more. I would also like to mention other events that are coming up. The Zombie Prom in Chicago, Illinois, on 21st and 22nd. We have the Midwest Haunters Convention coming up, Columbus, Ohio, May 23rd through the 27th. I think that's counting the bus tour as well. And we'll mention it again in our June podcast. We have the Premier Haunted Attraction Tour coming up June 22nd through the 23rd. You can go to premierhaunttour.com.
Thank you for listening to Haunt Topic Radio. Please leave a comment wherever you found this podcast. Each comment you leave will help spread the word to other haunters around the world. See you next time.